Hey, hi everybody. This is Certified Life and Executive Business Coach, Dr. Nelson Beltajar, coming to you live from Toronto, Canada. And for those of you listening, I'm asking you to please buckle your seatbelts and get ready, because Aubrey is about to take you on the road to rediscovery with another great episode. Grab your favorite beverage, sit in your favorite room, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Now, a quick reminder, you can hear this show anywhere you get your podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Spotify, we're on iHeartRadio, we're on Pandora, and we're also on a bunch of other platforms that you may not have even heard of worldwide. This is a global platform. This is a global show. If you happen to listen on Apple Podcasts, we invite you to leave a rate and review. If you don't listen on Apple Podcasts, we still want your input. Just please leave us an email at road2rediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's road2rediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your input. Let us know your feedback and your thoughts. Feedback is a gift, I always say, and we are truly, truly grateful for your listenership. My special guest is a leadership expert, best-selling author of The Leadership Book, A Step-by-Step Guide to Excellent Leadership. He's also the founder of the online leadership video platform, Leader Connect. Let's welcome Neil Jerd to the show. Neil, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you. I've been really looking forward to joining you. So thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you, sir. We reciprocate. We are very excited to have you on, and I'm ready to dig and unpack this and your journey for the sake of the listeners and incredible insight. So, Neil, you served as an Army officer, leading others throughout multiple duties and tours. What were some of your leadership struggles and challenges that you encountered in that part of your leader journey?
Well, I suppose some of them were the obvious ones that we were, I'm thinking primarily of Iraq, where we were under fire daily, like often. And it was an exceptionally dangerous tour. My dimple there is a relic of that tour. That's shrapnel from a rocket that landed next to me at Basra Palace, one of Saddam Hussein's former palaces, of which I think he had many. But leading people in those circumstances, where it's not just about getting the job done, it's about continuing to operate, getting the job done, but with that exceptional extra factor of fear. And we had a very large organization. Around 200 soldiers spread over Iraq with a few in Kuwait. So we were geographically very spread as well. So leading an organization that was, and it was a logistics organization, it was a Gurkha unit. So my soldiers were mostly from Nepal, but serving with the British Army, but also with a very, very high percentage. We were augmented before the tour with a lot of British Army soldiers, but a lot of the British Army, certainly at the time, was soldiers from Commonwealth countries. So we were a very, very diverse unit. I think we had soldiers from something like 25 different nationalities, which is an exceptional mix for such a, when you take 200 people and put them under pressure. I loved that. The variety, the diversity made our group really interesting. And I think that we bonded very well. We had, thankfully, we had time to go through training before the tour together. So we knew each other very well by the time we went.
Makes sense. No, that makes a lot of sense, Neil. So when you mentioned the diversity that you had, a great blend of soldiers from different areas, which, of course, you know, introduces a myriad of new diverse way of thinking, ideas, and thoughts. And so as a leader, where all of these soldiers are they're counting on you for guidance, for direction, and so forth. Is there a sense of mental preparedness that you have to carry yourself through prior to meeting with the soldiers or giving the orders or starting or embarking on the assignment? Is there a mental preparedness, not only as a leader, but as a leader of a diverse group of men with very different ideas, that you have to kind of prepare yourself for to effectively lead them?
I think that so the thing in the situation that I was in is that we shared values. So although people's backgrounds were very different. You know, I had New Zealanders, Zimbabweans, Malawians, like a real mix. So people's upbringing and family situations were totally, totally unrecognizable to each other. But something had brought us all together in the British Army and serving in Iraq with a very, you know, a huge amount of focus really in what we were doing. That really helps. I think diversity is absolutely brilliant as long as you share values.
Yes.
I think where you get friction between people, it's where their values don't align. You know, however similar your backgrounds are, if your values don't align, there'd be conflict. And however different your backgrounds are, if your values do align, well, that would be wonderful. And I think in that situation where people's values did align, and that's, you know, again, this is only my perspective, but I'm friends with quite a lot of my soldiers even now, and this is 15 years on, 16 years on, where the values line up, you can really get the best out of people. But another thing I should say, and is that, so a lot of this very diverse group of soldiers, but I think this is the same in most organizations, they were exceptionally intelligent. I had wearing very junior ranks in some cases, people with master's degrees, lots of people with first degrees, so some genuinely very well educated, or when they weren't well educated, highly intelligent and self-educated people.
Yes.
And I'd been in the army long enough by that stage to understand that, and this is a big theme in my work now, that the leader is never going to be the cleverest, never going to be, frankly, never going to be the best in the team. And the trick is to gather the energy of people and to look after people and to care for people without putting, I mean, I never put myself under the pressure to make every decision, although ultimately every decision would rest with me. But yes. I would be a fool to try and step in and make every decision. And I certainly didn't.
I see. And you were able to afford to not make every decision because, as you mentioned earlier, these are very intelligent soldiers with degrees, advanced degrees, and so forth. And so that would lead me to assume that in some of the decision making, you've engaged your soldiers in terms of, you know, the next move, or what does everyone think of this, the current situation that we're in, and how do we get around this obstacle? And to me, that's brilliant because it's being able to shape and guide your soldiers in a way that everyone works as a single unit, but at the same time, it makes them feel more engaged because their thoughts and opinions matter.
Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing worse than for me personally, yeah. But I think it's the case for almost everyone to just mm-hmm. almost be a robot where you're just being given orders and obeying them all the time. It's completely disheartening, but it yeah. also makes no sense when you've got a group of, I suppose, any number of people. Yeah. It's crazy to switch off all of the brains other than the most, the one that's carrying the most rank. And, you know, again, often in terms of seniority, you'll find the person in charge has just been there longest. They're just oldest. And yeah. That was almost true of me as a company commander. And if you believe that you are in charge because you're the best and you make the best decisions, you'll get into all sorts of trouble.
Yes.
You know, it makes sense to really engage the people that you work with, not just so they feel included, no. but also because they're going to have some, well, better ideas because they know the situation better. Usually yeah. they're closer yeah. to the problem. Arrogance can cause a leader a lot of trouble.
Oh, it surely can. It surely can. And and to your point earlier, Neil, to be genuinely interested in the thoughts of your soldiers when it comes to reaching, let's say, a crossroads or a fork in the road where a decision needs to be made, like you said sure. as well, not just to make them feel engaged, but to genuinely and authentically want them involved in the decision making. And I feel the soldiers are intelligent enough, and just like just like a team in a civilian workplace, they are intelligent enough to know when you're authentic and to detect when you're not, when you bring them in to see what they think on something. They have that intelligence and that barometer to tell whether or not, you know, you are genuinely authentic in wanting them involved. So what you mentioned before about a leader and their arrogance, it reminds me of a graphic. And quite honestly, I some years ago, I seen this graphic in LinkedIn. Okay. So I'm on LinkedIn. So, it showed a graphic of, an older early years traditional leader. And that graphic was, it was a bunch of soldiers and they had a platform that they were all carrying and they were pointing forward, and the leader was sitting on top of the platform as if they were carrying him, and he was pointing forward, and you know that represented like an early years traditional leader of that time. And then the new, more appropriate leader, it showed, was there was no platform. There was a rope. The leader was at the beginning pointing forward, and everyone was pointing forward, and everyone was pulling the rope, including the leader, moving in that direction, and showing, you know, the leader is towing the line as well. They're not being carried, right? So everyone is involved. The reason why I wanted to articulate that illustration, because it resonated with me in a big way. Okay. And being, I haven't served in the military, but being a military brat myself, where both parents have served, and this is, you know, years ago, I wanted to see what your thoughts were on this, because with the leadership that you're describing, to me, it's almost like the new shift in leadership that has turned to the servant leader type of space. And so, you know, in my thoughts and in what I've experienced over the past 20 and 30 years, I think there's been a shift in leadership style throughout at least the civilian workforce. And in the military space, are you seeing this shift happening in the military space as well, because with chain of command and rankings and that sort of thing, in my civilian mind, I would think a lot of that traditional leadership would have to be preserved. But at the same time, there should be some space for that shift to occur in the military environment. Could you share some insights on that, Neil?
Yeah, I've got a few thoughts, actually. The first goes back to that graphic, which I know the one that you mean.
Okay, yeah.
And my only thought on that, though, is that the leader shouldn't be so immersed in the task that they lose sight of the big picture, which might mean that every now and again, the leader does need to put the rope down, climb up on the block or whatever, where they have a better view.
Yes.
And make sure that the team's going the right way. And there's also probably another thing the leader needs to do, which is to get around the team. So not be so focused on pulling your own rope that you don't notice that the person behind you has bleeding hands or whatever. And I'm going with the metaphor there, but looking after people, connecting with people and being clear of the objective, sometimes don't go with being heavily pulled into the task. And I did a TED talk on this last year about the need for leaders to, it's called pause and allow, but it's about the need for leaders to step back, to think, and sometimes to allow other people to step up and take the lead. Leaders who get caught in every loop, which is really easy to do nowadays, especially with technology, often forget what it is they're leading. They're so busy. And then coming on to your question, now I'm not in the military anymore, I should say, but I do have a part-time role running courses for cadet force officers. And cadet forces, there isn't quite an American equivalent of it as far as I know, but maybe military academies come close. And I run the officer training for the adults who work there. So I have some link with the military, but I think it has changed. I think that certainly when I went through Sandhurst, it was very much on the job leadership training. We were taught how to lead a platoon attack or some other operation, and then were assessed in the way we led it. And I don't remember much focus on emotional intelligence or communication skills other than how to give a lecture. And I know that sort of stuff is covered now. Yes, I think that probably has changed quite a lot. Of course, even in my part-time job, we still wear rank, but again, it's if you're foolish enough to play your rank, you'll be getting it wrong. And the more you can, you see, ultimately, the leader owns the decision. Ultimately, but you'd be an absolute fool if you don't create the best forum to hear the best ideas before you decide what to go with. And rank and status and grade can really make other people filter what they say. They're thinking, gosh, I need to impress this guy. It can really make a difference to what they say, or perhaps I shouldn't give bad news. And if you've created a very rank conscious team where no one gives you bad news, you're going to be making some decisions based on really bad information.
Yes.
So the rank thing, yes, it's there, it's visible, but I would say a good leader does their absolute best to minimize it.
I see. Minimize that while at the same time maximizing the input and feedback from the people surrounding them.
Yeah. And the thing is, what I'm not advocating is giving up leadership. I mean, you're still in charge. So you're still absolutely, but it's doing it with skill.
Yes.
Which brings other people's energy in. I mean, ultimately, if you're in charge of a team, that team success is on your shoulders. But if you bring other people in, it's much more likely that the team will succeed.
Yes, 100%. And to me, one of the most respected skills is the skill to influence. And when I say influence, I mean that in the most productive, respectful ways, not in a way that is deceiving, but, you know, you want to influence the team. You want the team to have buy-in to where, you know, they're not just supportive of you, but they're supportive of the team and working for, you know, the team and contributing to the team. And, you know, the most effective leaders have this gift of influencing and leveraging the strengths of each individual on their team for the greater success of the team as a whole. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, totally. I think in really high performing teams, there's quite a lot of flexibility. Now, this mm-hmm. is the allow, actually. This is the allow part of the TED talk I was talking about. You know, you focus people on what they're trying to achieve, but then you give them a lot of freedom in how they pursue that, which allows them to use their talents. And generally, where you can focus people on work that exploits their talents, mm-hmm. they're going to do so much better than if you try and push them to do stuff that they're less good at.
Yeah. Well, exactly, because they're passionate about their strengths, their talents, and not only do they have a space to where they can express that and demonstrate, but they also feel respected, you know, by the leadership in letting them and allowing them to use those skills, to use those strengths. I have another area I'd love for us to dabble into, Neil. Before we do that, I wanted to say thank you for your clarification earlier, metaphorically speaking, with that graphic that we were talking about in LinkedIn. I'm so glad you're familiar with it, because you made it totally clear, completely clear about the role of the leader to also periodically not be so immersed in the pulling of the rope with everyone, but to occasionally, you know, take a step on that platform and get that higher level view to ensure that the group is moving in the right direction, and to also make sure that everyone is good, so to speak, no bleeding hands, et cetera. Right. So that paints a clear picture of the distinction, right, between the leader and those on the team. The leader has to have that higher level view to ensure the direction and everything. So, that's absolutely extraordinary. A slight shift is I want to talk about, if we can, self-leadership. Because the style that you are that you're articulating in terms of what you teach, what you coach, and quite honestly, personally, your style of leadership, leveraging the strengths of others, getting their input and involvement and feedback when it comes to decision making, right, and being supportive in their role, allowing them to use their strengths, it's a brilliant model. Right. And I know in a lot of people's minds and hearts, they may think, well, it's quite obvious, really. But in a lot of cases, for some people, it's not as obvious, because some people do get wrapped up in that title. They get wrapped up in that rank, you know, and in those cases, it's hard for them to see the quite obvious that others do in getting the feedback from others, you know, asking what they think about something, leveraging the strengths of each one, and not assigning someone something that they are disenchanted with just because you're the leader. So in knowing that this is in feeling in my mind that this is a brilliant model, I think it's brilliant because, to me, I see a better degree of sustainability with this in two ways, right? Number one, sustainability in the longevity of your team is exponential, I believe, in this model. And number two is this manifests in future leaders, it sounds like. So I wanted to ask you about self-leadership. Is there some degree of self-leadership that's required of oneself? So if the leader gives some degree of autonomy to their to the individuals on their team, making them feel empowered, you know, because, you know, they've earned that, they're leveraging their strengths. So when they have that autonomy, there's some degree of self-leadership they must have with themselves and be self-managed, which to me, in some cases, can manifest in becoming a future leader. Can you share some insights on the importance of self-leadership?
Yeah. And I think that, correct me if I'm off track on what I think it is that you mean, Aubrey. So I see leadership as something which should buzz throughout an organization. So for me, leadership is about increasing your impact by engaging others in pursuit of a purpose. Mm-hmm. And that definition, you see, has got no link to rank or status or position.
Sure. Yes.
So anyone can do that. And you want as many people as possible, ideally everybody, taking the lead where they have something to lead. But to do that, you need to do a couple of things. Firstly, you have to be really clear what the objective is. Mm-hmm. And your role as the overall leader or the mm-hmm. leader of a team is to make sure that everybody in the team absolutely gets it and is bought into that objective. And that, you know, that's a huge, I talk about connection and direction as summarizing what leadership is. Connect mm-hmm. with people, have a clear sense of direction. Mm-hmm. When you've done that, you want people to take that sense, to take leadership. You want that kind of that swarm of bees approach where everyone's doing their own thing, but they're all ultimately serving the hive.
Yes, you do.
That there are some constraints there. You know, you have to have, again, values is a really important thing. People mm-hmm. have to work to the values. Mm-hmm. And they'll have certain things that they can't do. So in most organizations, it will be, well, you can't spend more than this, and you can't you know, you can't do any deals outside the business without sign off or whatever. There'll be certain things that you don't want people doing, but the more you can let them do, the better. You know, frankly, the fewer rules you put in, the more energized and creative people will be. Mm-hmm. So self-leadership, but actually just almost a responsibility to lead, a feeling that people are so excited by the purpose mm-hmm. And feel, I mean, you used the word empowered earlier, but they absolutely feel it's their responsibility, it's part of their job to shift things forward towards that purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see.
And being chased by the sun, which is very rare. I live in the north of England, you get yes. almost no sun, but you can probably see that it's
yes, I can.
it's just found a gap in my defenses. Can I just do something to get rid of that? Because otherwise,
feel free, absolutely, feel free.
Awesome. This is highly unusual.
Oh, wow. Well, it's going to be a bright, beautiful day there. It has been, I would say. Yeah. So that's a plus. That's a plus. And yeah, that makes perfect sense, Neil. I want to thank you again for that clarification. You know, there must be constraints, right? And there's a balance to strike when it comes to having those constraints, but at the same time, granting autonomy for cultivating that creativity and engagement from the individuals on your team. So that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So moving right along, could you please tell us about the Michelle Jarrett Trust and the work that you've been doing to benefit and support young people and veterans?
Sure. Well, I lost my first wife, Michelle, in a crash in 2009. And Michelle had flown helicopters in the Royal Air Force, but actually just left the Air Force at the time. And my daughters were very young at the time. So I've single parented for many years. Although, as you know, I've actually just remarried about a month ago. Yes. But I set the trust up in Michelle's name, and it does two things. We raise money for veterans is part of it. So we give money to veterans charities. Mm-hmm. But the other thing we do is quite a wide mandate, but it's extracurricular activities for young people. Mm-hmm. So really things which increase opportunity. Mm-hmm. And we've done a lot actually over the last 15 years. We fund canoeing trips, expeditions, mm-hmm. Musical events actually. Mm-hmm. We've sent whole school groups off to adventurous training centers. Mm-hmm. We've done quite a lot of work with handicapped kids in the area. We funded training for them. Mm-hmm. So that's it really. But it's been going since Michelle died. I've got a lovely team of people that work with me running it. And that gives the impression I run it actually. There's a lovely guy called Brian Gregory who chairs it now.
I see.
But yes, that's the charity. And then we give to the Army Benevolent Fund, the Royal Air Force Benevolent Fund,
yes,
Good for Welfare Trust and other military charities.
Extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Very, very extraordinary. And I want to thank you for your service. And I have to commend you for just the absolute incredible work that you're doing in so many different spaces, beyond your service years and giving back and helping others in service and in civilian life in leading. I am going to look for and dog ear or flag your tech talk so I can listen to it later. And I would love to hear more incredible insights. And if you don't mind, in the episode show notes, I may even put a link to your TED Talk for listener insights. Neil, I wanted to ask you one final question, or the second to last final question. And it's basically this: there's a lot of tremendous insights you've shared in this short period of time. And I know there's a lot more, a lot of incredible anecdotes to becoming an effective leader that you have. If you could summarize in one sentence, the most important, effective, key takeaway to becoming an effective leader that would start someone on the path, what would that sentence be?
Know and control yourself.
Have that internal barometer, right?
Yeah.
I've
been with people in very high pressure situations, where you have a leader who can stay calm and who can make their mind work well in those situations, things will generally go well. Where somebody doesn't have the ability to control their emotions,
yes,
you will usually get a chaotic response. So I think that self-knowledge, which isn't the same as just suppressing emotion, it's
Right.
It's about really getting to know yourself.
Yes. An incredible amount of self-awareness for sure. Mm. Yeah. Wonderful. So Neil, how can the listeners connect with you, learn more about your great work? And like I said, I'm going to use the link for the TED Talk in the show notes, but how can the listeners follow you and learn more, even more?
Well, I think if they Google me, mm-hmm. Even in America, I'll come up. So it's Jurd, J-U-R-D. My book is on Kindle. It's on every format, but again, I'm not sure you can get the hard copy in the States. But anyway, the book's on Kindle, the leadership book. Leaderconnect.co.uk is our video platform. I've also got some stuff on YouTube. And then there's the TED Talk. It's kind of, yeah, in various places. It's scattered
different places. Okay.
Leader Connect is our main site, actually, and that's got a lot more videos by me, but also by a lot of other some really good speakers, actually, some really interesting speakers.
Oh, wonderful. We will put the link to Leader Connect in the episode show notes, as well as there's one way to find out if there is a link in Kindle in the US for your book, or if it's a different link, then we'll put that anyway. We'll put that link in the episode show notes anyway. That connects to ordering a copy of your book, and of course the TED Talk. We'll have some amazing links to incredible content that you have out there with your insights on leadership that the listeners can click on while listening to this wonderful, wonderful conversation. Neil Jurd, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, sir. I really, really hope that we can definitely stay in touch and hopefully have you on the show somewhere down the line in the future. Let's say if you release a new book or any other new programs developed, love to have you back on the show, sir.
Aubrey, thank you so much. It's been lovely. I've thoroughly enjoyed seeing you again. So thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much. It's been a joy and a delight chatting with you as well, Neil. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And you may feel like this at times, right? But in our daily struggles and adversities, we're never alone. Hope is always around the corner. And I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know, someone you love, who needs motivation, inspiration, and support. We're all roadies on this journey of life, and it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadsrediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.